SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. They straightened everything out, right? On online, they said it was a computer thing. They said the computer said it was right there in the program, and the computer just didn't pick up the audio. So, thanks for when that happens. Drop a email, a tweet, or because a lot of times, you know. Can't monitor everything. So, in fact, thanks to, I think, Avi, my man Avi Friedberg was the first to let us know. And engineering took care of it. it's a funny thing for Casey because, you know, you call the one set of engineers, and then there's a set in Atlanta, there's a set in D.C., it's a whole... It's a thing. It's got satellites. It's got towers and bandwidth. It's very, very technologically advanced is the point. Our website too, stevebick.com, a weekend that has taken shape really as expected, and a lot of it focused on Oaklawn and Gulfstream for the most part. The top to bottom Gulfstream card is going to absorb a lot of attention, obviously, with the Fountain of Youth and the Devona Dale. We've got a weekend that's going to see some champions returning. Vequist draws the three for Butchie Reed. And Gary Barber and company, Adam Wachtel and Swilkin and Rod Ortiz aboard. Full field in that Devona Dale going the mile. And when it came to the Fountain of Youth, a group of 10 and Greatest Honor, all eyes on him. I see across the internet, it seems like people are going to line up against Greatest Honor. But he drew the eight, which is about that's the limit of where you want to be into the turn at Gulfstream. Some of the other logical players that whose names have come up heading into this: Tarantino is back, Rudy Brissett, and Fire at Will trying the dirt. We've been talking about that. Kendrick Carmouche coming down from New York to stick with him. And Prime Factor spins back into this spot after the considering is out of the Holy Bull, but out of the third place finish there, Drain the Clock. We talked yesterday. In fact, if you're listening to the replay, you just listened to Nick Cassata. That was a lot of fun. Drain the Clock, drew the rail, which really forces his hand. He's going to be forwardly placed anyway, but drawing the one hole makes no doubt about it. The interesting thing is there really isn't he may in some ways be the speed. There is that Spitzer gelding that Armando de la Cerda popped in here. So subtle. The homebred for Palmer's, for David and Teresa Palmer, who, of course, we remember with Bill Kaplan. In fact, I'm pretty sure the Palmers, weren't the Palmers involved in the Tampa? The Eddie Plisa horse yesterday? No, that okay. That's the other. That's a different set of. Yeah, that's Mellon and Elman. Okay, keep those Florida connections straight. But that one's got speed. So subtle, coming off the maiden win. There really's not open mouth speed horse in here. Drain the Clock is seemingly going to get the lead. And what's interesting about this field, there's nobody. Everybody's coming out of routes except for King's Ovation, and he's not a he wasn't a forward going type either for Dale. So pace seems controlled and moderate, and I imagine that Jose Ortiz with Greatest Honor is going to want to at least be probably going to be off the flank of Tarantino, I imagine. I think Greatest Honor will want to be third or fourth, a little closer than normal than he's been so far. We'll see. I don't think you want to drop too far out of it in this Fountain of Youth. Anyway, a head-to-toe, deep and fun 14 race card. That's just the matinee. That's the matinee. The evening card starts at 7. 14 race card. When is the last? The last post is 6:10. So it's not like they're. Of course, they're starting, I think, at 11:30. So long day at Hallandale Beach. And in addition to the big three-year-old dirt events, you've got the turf action of most varieties, including the Palm Beach for the three-year-old boys, mile and a 16th. You've got things like the McDermida. How about the grade 2 mile performer for Shug? Shug could be poised for a nice day. He's got Scarlet Sky in the Palm Beach as well. And Greatest Honor. Team Cassie well represented on the card. Safi Joseph too with a bunch. And Bill Mott as well. Maker. The Devona Dale, the Fountain of Youth, the very one, McDermott of Palm Beach, Canadian Turf, Gulfstream Mile, and the Honey Fox. Yeah. A big card. They also put together the action at Oaklawn for Sunday. They were a day ahead of things because, of course, they were a little behind. And the Biocoa, 5 o'clock, 5:11 Central on Sunday, and this has got the return of Monomoy Girl. She will start her 6-year-old campaign, and. The Distaff winner, and in fact, not just the Distaff winner, but how many in a row? So, well, since the DQ anyway, since the Cotillion, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 in a row coming into this. And of course, Florent Giroux, she was part of the reason that he set up shop. Doug Bradar, the Biocoa. Field of 6 they pulled together. In addition to the star, you've also got our super freak for Cherie. Istan Council showed up in here. Another broad. Steve Asmussen, Chris Hartman's got Chance to Shine, and Asmussen's also got Finite. So, in addition, the Down the Dusty Road drew a big, bulky field, and the Dixie Belle for the 3-year-old fillies. They got a nice little group in here. The Leblancs, Abrogate, I think she'll be a big part of the focus. And that nice first out winner, Windmill, for Rick Porter, the Street Sense filly, that whistled at a price, you'll recall, in January. Yeah, she's interesting, stretching out Or actually, doesn't that actually? Did she? No, yeah, 3 quarters. So she comes back in this spot sprinting as well. So the rest of that card came together okay. It's funny. One thing that Hammer kind of hinted regarding, the Oaklawn cards, I mean, obviously you were going to have the horses from New Orleans that are coming over for the stakes, but people were sitting on their hands for, over a week, and, horses didn't train. So people kind of wading back into the action. But it should make for, into next week as well for nice, some very nice cards. So the scene is kind of set for the weekend. We got more Sunday cards to be drawn in addition. But between Oaklawn's 2 days of stacked delayed stakes, Sam Houston, we're going to talk to Chris Griffin in hour two. We'll look at the stakes card on Saturday. Pick six for today. They've got a carryover into today, and we haven't talked to Chris for a couple of weeks, so we'll catch up on everything going on at Sam Houston as well. The rest of the racing, rest of the stakes, kind of quiet. Pasadena and at Santa Anita, they got a big weekend coming next week, and in New York, the Stymie. Early on the card on Saturday. I should note, speaking of the Stymie, the rest of the three stakes with Oaklawn, all three are part of the cross country on Saturday, looking ahead, along with the 7th and 9th at Aqueduct. So three stakes as part of that cross country will be fun. That's the bulk of things. A couple of notes about today. We've got, 10 in? We've got Mike Campbell coming up after the break. Yesterday, of course, reaction to the news in Arlington. We focused on the news portion with Matt Hegarty and then with Marcus Hirsch. And, I wanted to get Mike Campbell in here from the Horsemen. After they had a chance to issue a statement and formulate their response, and you'll hear it specifically from Mike in about 10 minutes. All right, Dick Powell, swing in. We'll talk about the winners from Japan and from Hong Kong, and it's going to be. I'll let some other news outlets handle the. The news from Saudi Arabia, which kind of a perfect coda to the Saudi Cup. Yeah. Check the newswire today when you get a chance. Steve Haskin later after Chris Griffin, and dive into Fountain of Youth. Rich Eng as well. Got to catch up with Rich. Missed him last week. All right. So there it is. A couple of things about yesterday's that Tampa racing that we focused on. Soup and Sandwich now will, out of that win at a mile and 40, he'll now get a chance to test the classic waters. Mrs. Weber, very excited about the prospects for this homebred. Into Mischief and an absolutely gorgeous, he is a gorgeous gray, is out of the Tappet mare, Super Scoop. And, that impressive debut win at 6.5 at Gulfstream, giving way to this two-turn opportunity. Now, half the field scratched out of it. So he just faced two horses, but he did have to maneuver, as it happens. Antonio Gallardo did have to kind of do some things with him and then kind of go through horses. So it feels like it was a productive exercise you know, learning the two turns. And he certainly went fast enough. It didn't look like it was a particularly, you know, smashing race until they stopped the clock. And there was also a little bit, I don't know if you saw this, and in fact, I should have reached out to Mark Cassie. He did a little, like a little skip jump, like he jumped either a shadow or, you know, something on the racetrack. He had like sort of a funny step in deep stretch. Did you see that? I should ask, check with Mark. I was like, whoa, what was that? But this is a horse that see what Haskin thought later. And it's funny. I was going back and forth earlier in the week, and I said to Jay, I sent a note to Jay. I said, you know, the soup and sandwich comes back on Wednesday, and he said, I got him in the fantasy league. So Jay was out ahead of soup and sandwich too. So we'll see. If you didn't see it, just why he is handsome. You know, gray, it's funny. Grays are, they're, you know, sometimes grays don't, you know, they don't have that same. I know there's certain people that just adore grays, but this one to me is striking. You know, with the dark mane and tail, and you know, they're funny. We had one nice gray. William's Lucky Gray, who we claimed, and she, you know, she was just kind of a nice rangy thing. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't a filly that you oohed and aahed over. We haven't had a lot of grays. I'm trying to think. We had terrible luck with one got a leg caught in the gate at Saratoga, and career was pretty much over at that point. That was brutal. Made two starts.
We've had limited experience with grays.
Turning to the two stakes, but we're excited about soup and sandwich, and Mrs. Weber certainly is. The boys' race, you had a modest upset. Imprimis was kind of late on the scene with Gallardo. Sammy Camacho, with the critical way, was forward quickly, and it was enough. And, you know, really turned aside the Pompa Dispersal purchase, was pressing. And that was, you know, that was as much as Critical Way, you know, was confronted. And this, you know, feels like this is Jose Delgado. This is a horse that, you know, seems to be at age seven, you know, at some of his best work of late. He's, you know, ran 97 Buyer in the Janus, got beat there by Imprimis, but an Extravagant Kid. But has been good. He, last fall, winning the Marshall Jenny, happens to be a Pennsylvania bred, so had that opportunity for Monster Racing. Was originally acquired by them last January in a $30,000 claim. So doesn't have a lot of for a 7-year-old. Does not have a lot of mileage on him. Only his 22nd start. Critical Way. A Tisway gelding bred by Blackstone Farm, and paid $760. Had a nice little score from Popo, thanks to Popo Morales and you know, the approach that Popo took to the Lightning City, which felt like the race that had more potential from a price standpoint. I mean, Imprimis was even money. Critical Way was just under 3-1. And Popo, you know, essentially was dutching his, you know, the two horses that he saw on form to win, Lenzi's Lucky Lady and Miss Aramet. And Miss Aramet was terrific. Eddie Plisa and This one at 8-1 wins the Lightning City. Coming out of the turf sprint, the off the turf race that was won by Ladies Island at Gulfstream. Rated very kindly with Alvarado, and wins and pays $18. Very nice. The favorite in here really didn't, you know, paint them Blues away. It's kind of attending the pace and didn't have much finish late for Jane Sabelli. So that was fun. I was kind of had tampon in the background, and it's always fun. It's always fun to tune in. The Richard Grunder is one of a kind. There's nothing quite like the Grunder. It's just answering Mike Campbell and here Case. Yeah, he I think we had an Eastern Time Central Time question. So let me send this to Casey. There you go. All right. Beautiful. Unbelievable. It's just so frustrating. Unbelievable. In case I'm having trouble pulling up the number here for him. Yeah. This is amazing. This is my phone that whenever I don't know if they gave an update, but getting the, you know, the numbers copied and pasted, it's become a nightmare. You go to copy the number, and instead it disappears, and you end up hitting the FaceTime button. It's awfully annoying. There you go. Mike Campbell's going to join us. I mentioned from the two conversations yesterday with Marcus and Matt Hegarty, you know, some of the options and that may or may not be viable. Certainly the Horseman, Mike, can tell us. I mean, if there is any reasonable expectation of moving the license. And you know, the frustration over this, we've had conversations with Mike, I don't know, more than 10 years, I'd say, closer to 15. Mike Campbell joins us, the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen Association. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I attacked this yesterday from a news, strictly as a news portion with Matt Hegarty and Marcus Hirsch. I was kind of waiting for, for you and the Horsemen to, formulate your thoughts and your response. And it came yesterday with a statement and talk about your reaction to this, and we'll go from there.
Well, the reaction is one of bitter disappointment. Churchill reneged on its promise to support racing in Illinois, and particularly in concern with Arlington Park. In 2020, when they bought Arlington Park from Dick Duchossois, turned it into a publicly traded company, we were quite excited. We thought that they'd bring all their experience in horse racing and and all the passion and interest and their marquee name and brand to Illinois racing. And in fact, it's just gone south just about every year since.
There's been, you know, a parade of miscues and of unfortunate turns of events in this story. And we hit on a few of them with Matt yesterday, and Marcus added in some other ones, including things like the recapture clause. There was the money that was supposed to be put aside from the riverboats that was basically hijacked away from both Thoroughbred and Standardbred interests. There were repeated attempts in Springfield to pass gaming legislation that seemingly were on the doorstep and invariably were extinguished for one reason or another. For this to get to this point has been, I mean, every single thing that could have gone wrong and gone in the wrong direction essentially has gone wrong.
Pretty much, as they say, you can't make this stuff up.
What is the short-term feeling, Mike, among the horsemen? And I don't know how much the regulators can contribute to this. You know, there was problems with them last year, and how much faith do you have in the statement by Churchill that they would. They would pursue other avenues for the license. What are your thoughts on those ends?
We have no confidence or faith or anything they say, but particularly a statement like that. Okay, the license is not there. Let's start with that. So in order to have a license, state of Illinois, we're a highly regulated business in Illinois. So one would have to have a racetrack. You have to have a racetrack. You have to have a prove that you have economic worth to sustain that racetrack. You have to apply for dates and be granted dates. Well, if Arlington closes, they have no racetrack. That license is site specific. You can't just take a license that is Arlington's and move it to a new location without having property that has a racetrack on it. So it's pretty hard. Maybe there's another meaning that, Kristangian has. I don't know. I hope there is, but I highly doubt it.
Let's start with the future in Chicagoland and Hawthorne. Is it practical to think about racing essentially year-round with some breaks, between seasons across town?
Well, Steve, you hit it right on the head. So now we are sharing. We had six racetracks a handful of years ago. We're down to one now if Arlington closes. And so Hawthorne, there has to be a place to race standardbreds too. We recognize the fact that the standardbreds have an industry that they want to protect. We're not happy with having to share our facility, but at the same time, it's necessary so that they have a place to race. So what's happened is that we would have racing from, say, May until we would have racing there in an early spring meet, but then the standardbreds would have the summer meet. There could potentially be no thoroughbred racing in Chicago area from May until September. So there's a gaping hole in our racing model now. And of course, without continuity and consistency, our seasoned handicappers are not going to welcome that. I can't see how it certainly doesn't build an industry. It will compromise the industry, and ultimately, I suppose that it will fail even more.
I mentioned yesterday with Marcus after I found the piece in the Daily Herald, right at the end of the Herald's coverage of the story yesterday, they mentioned Moline, East Moline, and that Quad Cities facility that Churchill the Churchill owns. Is that what's the status of that joint? And what about Balmoral?
Okay, in consideration of East Moline, it's laughable. The property has been sold. The barn area is no longer there. There's a grandstand that's boarded up. It's a very small thing, and it's in the middle of nowhere. You know, now you're talking about taking an iconic racetrack that is 45 minutes from downtown Chicago with a metro train station that connects to it, that is internationally and known nationwide, and we're going to move it to West Moline. I don't think so. You know, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for them, and it's disingenuous for them to even bring that up. Now, relative to Balmoral, Balmoral is interesting because it is for sale again. It was sold. The last purchasers were forced into a moratorium on no gaming there, and that still exists. And it would have to, the gaming bill would have to be reopened, and it would have to be allowed a gaming license. And it, too, is in a very rural area. So it works to a point, but nothing in comparison to nothing in comparison to Arlington Park.
I had Chris Block last week, Mike, on the strength of his happened that you know he had won that stake with Captivating Moon. At Fairgrounds, and so I asked him, you know, near the end of that conversation about his thoughts, and he essentially said that he anticipates and his family is anticipating that this would be the final year at Arlington. Do you think that there's even the potential to hold the horsemen together enough to, you know, to sustain things, or is a standalone at Hawthorne? I mean, you can't even talk about Fairmont, which is a completely different marketplace and hours away and a much lower level of racing. What do you expect to have happen here in the short term?
I think 2021, we will limp along as we have. Hawthorne is doing everything it can to complete their build out at Hawthorne. It's actually opulent. I have to say that what they're trying to do and what their family has done is, and they continually say yes, they want a casino license. Yes, they want to make money, but they also want to support racing, which is refreshing to us. We never have a problem at Hawthorne, never. And so, while they're doing that, though, no, I don't see racing doing well in Illinois with the loss of Arlington Park. Our whole owner base, by the way, hats off to Chris. He's a valued board member and vice president of my organization and great guy, too. And let me tell you, we're so happy. I told him I was so happy for Mr. Laufenbach because there's a guy that puts money in the horse racing game year after year, and we were happy to delighted to see him have some success. So, but we're really struggling. You know, this is not going to be helpful. I've implored, state leadership to get involved here. There's no reason why that property is 326 acres. There's no reason why 100 acres can't be maintained for racing. I've had many calls about people that have an interest in purchasing Arlington Park for the purpose of racing. Of course, they'd like to have a gaming license with it. One of the things that we need to find out, quite frankly, is there a moratorium that prevents gaming there? No one has ever answered that question. Churchill has not answered that question yet, that if a moratorium exists between they and Rivers to prevent gaming from taking place at Arlington Park, we don't know.
That's obviously an area where the regulators, I imagine, could have some say and provide some clarity.
I'd like to know where the regulators are. We have a great chairman, don't get me wrong, and we have an interested group of commissioners, and we're happy to have them. It's refreshing, too. We've had a change recently that actually listens to the horsemen's opinions. But I got to tell you, where are they? Where is anybody? You got a guy like me trying to fight on behalf of an entire industry, and frankly, it's not enough. You know, and thank God, Steve, that you weigh in and are concerned about this. I just can't imagine that an iconic racetrack like this can just be closed. And the only reaction to it so far is, you know, oh, well, you know, it's what are we going to do? You know, everybody's wringing their hands. Well, I got to tell you something. There's a time for people to step to the plate and say, you know what, we're tired of this corporate greed. I have no problem with their share price closing Wednesday at 236, but it's hard for me to feel sorry for them. I'm kind of feeling sorry for the people that are going to be turned down and turned away when 2022 goes along and they got no place to race their horses at, but they live and have families in Chicago. That's going to bother me. I feel bad for them.
Well put. That you know, you bring up a point. I didn't check the Tribune and the Daily Herald this morning for any IRB reaction, but it or for I for that matter, I don't think I've seen any state officials or have any city or state representatives had anything to say?
Well, I commend our governor. You know, he did sign the gaming bill. You know, the former governor had vetoed it twice. Seems like I've been working on this forever. And he said that he supports racing. Now, okay, what does that mean? You know, I don't know. You know, certainly the governor's staff is, I have talked to them before. They know my telephone number. They aren't required to discuss this with me, but we have a state agency that's subject. They're tasked with supporting racing and enforcing the Illinois Horse Racing Act. And part of that has to do with tourism. And so, look, I'm waiting for anybody to weigh in other than the newspaper saying, you know, that Arlington's going to close. So I'm not. If I was king of the world, let me tell you what, I'd stop this nonsense. And if nothing else, I would carve out 100 acres over there and make sure that it was funded properly to continue racing at Arlington Park. That's what I would do. But I'm not king, so I'm subject to a lot of other folks that have to weigh in and help support me and help accomplish what I'd like to see done, which is to save for future generations racing at Arlington Park.
There is, I think, the shareholder call today, and I don't know if there's going to be any Q&A, you know, on the topic. There's going to be, I suppose, as you mentioned, Mike Campbell with us from the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. If there's people that are willing to step in and buy the property from Churchill, why should they care if racing continues, essentially? I mean, if they get what they want for the property, why
can't one would think, Steve.
Right?
Yeah, it's the question that nobody seems to ever ask. What's your problem? Why are you so... Why are you, as a brand, as a horse racing brand, with a genesis of your fame being horse racing, how in the world could you turn your back on racing this completely when, in fact, there are other options?
There's actually an interesting piece that I'll have to get to later from NBC Sports in Chicago, and is actually turned up on Yahoo's sports page, trying to conflate an opportunity between a new facility for the Bears with Arlington. Pretty interesting. I'll send this out. Arlington Park Bears could give Chicagoland the stadium it needs. Interesting. Well,
yeah, no, I've heard that too.
Mike, because there's been so many twists and turns in this over, you know, this you know, the period. I mean, we've been doing the show since 2005, and this has been, I mean, almost back to that point. I can recall, you know, having one discussion after another, you know, starting with that riverboat fund that was basically stolen from the horsemen, you know, through all the different opportunities for gaming that, you know, that died on the vine. And until this last, you know, Lucy in the football moment in 2019. So it just seems inconceivable that, but at the same time, Mike, the same thing, you know, we've said the same things about Hollywood and somewhat about Bay Meadows as well, which wasn't necessarily as high profile, but was certainly as historic.
Well, let me tell you how bad it's gotten. Last year was a COVID year, and we all recognize the issues involved with that. We raised a totality of purse money last year in Cook County, in Chicagoland area, a total between Hawthorne and Arlington of $10 million. It is begotten. We have, as a horseman's group, we have lobbied, got money from the state budget to support racing. We've done everything but find a racing model that works. And we continue to limp along and create new commissions that we don't earn, but we get as subsidies. And when in fact we have a metropolitan area of some 6 million people that love horse racing, with a racing model that's been broken for some time and legislation that hasn't existed, but now exists. But suddenly Churchill is turned down, which could have saved the entire industry. It's good for Hawthorne. It's good for Fairmont Park, but it was not good for Churchill Downs. It's just, again, you can't make this kind of stuff up. Who in their right mind turns down a gaming license in a city the size of Chicago with an ideal location? Beats me, especially if your brand is horse racing. We're very upset. You know, it's the whole thing, and then the village of Arlington Heights, they think that an industrial 444 acres dedicated to industrial that's going to take 5 or 6 years to build out, and where there's already a glut of it that's available right now, that they think that they're going to broaden their tax base. Good luck with that. They think that they're going to take the metro line and they're going to convert into some residential use. Well, good luck with that, because there's rules, federal laws and rules governing railroads that don't let you do something like that. So I question the whole validity of what they've been, of even what the village is doing, and it will not replace horse racing. It will certainly not replace what a casino at Arlington Heights at that location would have created. 750 frontside jobs, over 1,000 jobs on the backstretch, gone.
Well, and obviously, you know, we haven't even folded in, you know, the retraction of the breeding, you know, the Illinois breeding industry, which, you know, is down to, you know, handfuls of mares.
There's like 100 mares being foaled this year. You know, we used to have 2,000. So, again, and last year or 2 years ago when the bill with gaming bill was signed, the optimism was just, we had people calling my office and we were all high-fiving. You know, I mean, and all, it's just like it's a dream that has just gone away. Again, I would encourage Churchill, if you got a heart, if you believe in racing, if you really want to support those backstretch people that you talk so much about, you know, that you use when it's in your best interest, then I'll tell you what, then cut apart 100 acres and sell it to some people that'll race horses there. There's plenty of them out there and they know it.
And then the other 200 plus acres for the commercial development that, you know, that supposedly is at the heart of this.
Even I will say that it's a large area. It can be used for other purposes. Part of that 326 acres. I understand their point of view, and I don't disagree with that. If I owned it, if I were king, I'd do the same thing. What I'm saying is there's at least 100 acres there that there's no reason to tear down that grandstand. There's no reason to run bulldozers across that turf course, which is one of the world's best. There's no reason to discontinue horse racing, which has been a part of the economic engine for Arlington Heights and Palatine for many, many years now. There's no reason to dismiss all these jobs and all these people. There's no reason that for all of us to have to give up our homes. There's no reason for us to all have to leave our families to go to other states. It's simply without reason. There's a greater responsibility to people than just shareholder value for a greedy corporate entity. They wouldn't do it in the Commonwealth, and I don't think they should do it in Illinois.
That's a fair way to phrase it. Mike, this is it's anguishing, and as you mentioned, the excitement and the brief period where it seemed like a bright future was at hand after so many frustrating twists and turns. I mean, to deal with this, it's tough.
It's like, Steve, it's like war. You're in a foxhole with somebody that's on your side, and then all of a sudden they turn their guns on you. I mean, we worked hand in hand on this. I forfeited my stable. I forfeited my entire life to work on behalf of the horsemen. And then was rejected. Once they got what they got, and let me tell you something, relative to moving that license, does moving the license mean that they're going to, that they apply for a gaming license in Waukegan to build a gaming site there? Or does that mean that when the city of Chicago, when they propose their city of Chicago casino, that you can be sure that they will apply it for a license to run that? But yet at the same time, they ditched horse racing. And all of us that have supported them and horse racing for years. And
Mike
if
Campbell
they did from, it here, they'll do it everywhere else too.
Well, and that's Hollywood is being held up as and to some extent Calder, being held up as the other examples. Mike, we'll see if this thing has, if there's potential for alternate next steps. But I gotta tell you, it's just deflating, and hearing the frustration, from you, it really kind of brings it home. I mean, handling it as a news story yesterday, but needing the human perspective from you today. So I appreciate it. And I I'm sorry that this continues to be, such a source of, sadness and kind of despair. I don't know how else to phrase it.
Oh, no, believe me, I'm so tired of hearing, this excuse that, well, it's just business, they're a corporation, they have a responsibility, fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders. Okay, well, what about all the people of Illinois who they made a promise to and then broke? There's such a thing as a social responsibility, too. Now, that doesn't maybe sell too well on Wall Street, but it sells damn well on Front Street.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
All I can say is, fans across America, come on, help us out here, man. If you want to see, if you want to see this happen time and time again, you know, I guess, you know, we can choose to sit down and do nothing, or we can stand up for something. And I just think it's time to stand up and say, hell no, we're not going to take this anymore.
And didn't the Jockey Club talked about involvement a couple of years ago at the roundtable. They talked about, you know, stepping in distressed scenarios.
Here's what you learn about when you do my job, unfortunately, and especially as deep a dive as I've taken into it. You learn about campaign contributions, and you learn about special interest. That's it. I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong. I wouldn't even speculate on that. I would just say that, you know, I've seen a lot since I've been president of the ITHA, and I assume I'll see more.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, you know, it, whenever you need a platform and even if it's just to express the frustration, please, you let me know what we can convey.
Well, I'll tell you this, Steve. I go to work every day, and I can tell you honestly that I am so proud to serve the horsemen of Illinois. I will pursue their best interest till if I have to attach a bayonet. And so my goal in this is simply to demonstrate that the quality of racing in Illinois needs to be continued, and that we preserve something for future generations relative to racing in Illinois. That's my end goal.
Mike Campbell, the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen Association. Mike, hang tough, and again, whatever I can do, I'm happy to communicate, you know, anything that can help in this.
Listen, I appreciate it. You're the first guy in my entire association that said something like that. You know what? I don't even think of that, Steve, because I'm so used to doing it on my own. But I've got a lot of top professionals that work for me too. But I will tell you that I truly appreciate that, and I know that's sincere. And I know your passion for racing is equals mine or is more than mine. So thank God for somebody.
Well, if there's something to be done, we can do what we can. There's seeing the way people talk about, you know, their first race experience, their first trip to the racetrack, growing up in Chicagoland, and it's one of the crown jewels of the game. So.
Best horses in the world, you know, and have raced there. So that needs to be considered.
Mike, we'll talk soon. We'll talk again.
Steve, thanks a lot. So appreciate it. And thanks to all the racing fans out there who truly support horse racing. And hopefully in Illinois at some point we'll have better news. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Mike Campbell, everybody. And we'll certainly have Mike back as things go forward. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe there's a few points there that make a lot of sense. Let's stay right here. I think I got Dick Powell standing by and listening in. Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I know Mike a little bit. We had a late mutual friend named Justin Cassidy, who was from Illinois, worked for the Horsemen, worked in Oklahoma. That's how I got to know Mike a little bit at the various conferences. And he is what anyone just heard there was what you get from Mike in real life.
He's been the voice for the horsemen for as long as I've been doing this. I mean, I have a case. If I asked Case to go through the records, I mean, I don't know how many. 15 times, probably at least on average once a year on this topic, and you know, shepherding various gaming legislation, and through the periods where, you know, basically the horsemen were getting screwed by Springfield repeatedly, you know, including a gigantic fund of money that was essentially stolen from them. And, you know, this goes back to the origins of gaming in Illinois with the riverboats. And it, I mean, it, it's hard to believe that every single thing that could have gone wrong or gone in a direction that was detrimental, that that's what essentially happened.
Well, this just my editorial is I am so sick of reading commentators who portray horsemen and horsemen groups as selfish Neanderthals. That we'll see, whether it's Mike, whether it's Eric Hamelback, or anyone representing individual HBPAs, and they're greedy, they're this, they're that, they want to drug their horses, and it's just like, oh, God. It's so inaccurate, it's so wrong, and the people that are writing it, they have to know better. So then, if I'm right, then they know better. Well, then, whose side are you on? You're not an objective observer, just so though I think it falls this way. You always seem to be falling in the one direction. And there's people like Mike out there, you know, like you say, he's going to run out of bullets and he's going to use a bayonet in hand combat. He's going to be like the guy in Monty Python, you know, cut his arm off. Cut about the problem. but the see these depictions of horseman groups as the boogeyman. Like, oh, God. So that'll be my soapbox comment.
No, that's greatly appreciated. You know, you mentioned Eric, and you think about the late Rick Violette, and. Now Joe Applebaum and Alan Foreman, and you know, whenever there's been these discussions on the variety of topics, there's a certain, you know, a certain element that you're referring to that is, you know, is eager to paint the horseman in a negative light, and it's distasteful at the least, and a very fair point, you know, from on your, you know, from your end. I appreciate it. Dick, let's get some results in, and I've got to reach for my international conversation points, and actually I want to get the Japanese results in quickly first before we talk Hong Kong, because the both of those races, you know, early Sunday morning with Cafe Faro winning the February, and that's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then this La Perouse that won the Hyacinth and has got a very, from a female standpoint, female family standpoint, it's got a very American pedigree. And, you know, undoubtedly, you know, the efforts will be made to, you know, to get this one toward Derby. I haven't seen much follow-up from Sunday, but some thoughts about the racing from Tokyo Sunday.
Well, he's pretty interesting. He went off second choice. If David was Hakaru Pegasus, who wound up running fourth. La Perouse was pretty far behind and then came rallying up the rail with Christophe Lemaire and kind of won going away, going a mile. This 136 and 4 track, when you see Japanese dirt tracks, they're very deep. They're not skating over the top. They're going into the ground. He came home good. He's by a Japanese stallion named Zeno Rob Roy, who is a son of Sunday Silence. And Zeno Rob Roy's dam is the greatest stakes winner, Roman Rachel. The bottom side is All-American. The first band is by Empire Maker, second band by King Mambo, third band by Relaunch, fourth band by Majestic Light. So this is a nice combination of pedigrees, and the Sunday Silence is a dirt line, even though he's been a dominant turf sire in Japan. And so it certainly has the pedigree to go a lot farther than a mile in the race. It looks like he'll go a lot farther than a mile. So hopefully, if he's on track for the mile and a quarter for Saturday night, he could bring a pretty interesting element, because it doesn't look like he'll have any trouble with the distance. I don't think he'll have any trouble with any kind of track condition, you know, whether it's wet and deep or tiring or anything else like that. He seemed to thrive in that. So visually, it was impressive. It looked good.
I thought so too. And I'm sure Steve Haskin will weigh in when we talk to him in the next hour. And then it was funny. I brought up Cafe Faro, and they hadn't drawn the races yet last week. And there he was. This, of course, the Paul Pompa American Faro out of Mary's Follies, which, brought seven figures. I don't know if there's a, real intent, for the end of the year with this one to, come toward the States, but he certainly would fit. He looked even better here as an older horse than he did last year.
And being a dirt horse, there's the Japan Dirt Cup later in the year, but that certainly doesn't have the prestige of the Japan Cup on turf. So I would think America Dirt could be in its future, and then obviously the following winter Middle East Dirt could be in its future. But he's the second Grade One Group One American Faro, but the first one on the dirt. The other one was on the turf.
Yes.
So American Faro, who was nominated for a Hall of Fame yesterday.
He was.
When I saw him train, I was impressed. Duh. But I compared him to Michael Jordan. I mean, he got over the ground as athletically as any horse I've ever seen. It's spectacular. And now it's stud. Just awesome. Horses seem to be able to do anything. And, I would think he would be first ballot Hall of Fame. And hopefully we get to see a Japanese son over here.
Turn the attention to Golden 60, who's just unstoppable.
Well, it's funny. Before the race, I'm reading stories, and there's kind of like a sentiment that, well, if we're going to beat him, today's the day. And there was some of his rivals were kind of questioning why Francis Liu put him in the mile and a quarter race instead of the 7 furlong Silver Jubilee. And he got stuck behind the slow pace again. And short field, the time warp made the lead, but had no pressure on him. There was a middle move from Columbus County, and that didn't really quicken the pace up. It looked like it did, but when you look at the sectionals, it didn't. But then his Golden 60, well, let me work my way backwards. Last half, 44.48, mile and quarter race. Last 6 furlongs, 107 and 9.2. Last mile, 133.06, and he's at least three wide most of the entire trip. Now, Ferrari, who had a great ride by Joe Marrera, who won the Hong Kong Derby 2 years ago, Golden 60 won it last year, Ferrari saved ground, split horses, got the jump, And even so, Golden 60 was able to prevail. The chart says short head. It looked closer than that, but Golden 60 finishes up full of run, 2 minutes and change. And now he'll probably come back on Champions Day in April. He kind of dodged what was probably the biggest bullet he's going to face this year. And was lugged in a little bit in the stretch, which is, you know, that starts to get concerning when you're looking for, you know, anything in the armor. That can be worrisome.
Agreed.
But he just somehow he's finding a way, and the dynamics of the race are up against him. You know, it's not like fast pace takes over, wins the fun. No, slow pace, losing ground, still able to get up in time and showing a lot of courage in doing it. So he's now, I don't know, what is it, 15 out of 16, 12 in a row, 13 in a row. It's just amazing what he's doing. The son of Medaglia d'Oro, locally bred, locally owned, locally ridden, and just keeps getting it done. There's really no value paramutually, but races are very fun and very exciting to watch.
How about the other features?
I got footmarks on my rear end from kicking myself. Waikuku was great in the Silver Jubilee. 7 furlongs, 120.71. He won by a length and a quarter. Joe and John Size combined for that one. He just was terrific. And at 7 furlongs, especially with no Golden 60 in the race. The Hong Kong Classic Cup is for 4-year-olds. It's 1,800 meters, mile and eighth. Healthy Happy and Alexis Bedell go on the lead. 14 runner field go on the lead, set a modest pace. You know, not too slow, but just steady, steady, steady. Turns for home. No one can get by him. He winds up hanging on by a nose at 22-1. I mean, that's just a phenomenal ride. The kick marks are from Russian Emperor at 80-1, getting up for second, paying $37 to place. And I'm thinking, as we said on the show last week, I like Russian Emperor. I think he's improving. Next start, the BMW Derby is the one I'm waiting for him. I didn't think he was ready for this leap forward.
Yeah.
Now, where I'm really mad at myself is that there was a race earlier in the season with Excellent Proposal, who was one of the chalks for Sunday morning. And Excellent Proposal had won a mile and eighth race in like 48, which is way above standard. And I came to the conclusion, rightfully so, that this really isn't a good group of 4-year-olds this year. So if that's the case, then, you know, kind of anything goes. So I'm thinking, oh, gee, I'm onto something. I'll be ready for Russian Emperor when we get to the BMW Derby at a mile and a quarter instead of Sunday morning and the Classic Cup at a mile and eighth at 80-1. Oh, the Quinellas, the place price. He's the Galileo cult that, you know,
There's a valuable, a valuable lesson there, which is that if you, you know, when you latch on and you notice a horse that, you know, that you know has got talent and, you know, you're already predisposed that, you know, might as well be all in for, you know, for each opportunity,
Yeah.
You know, I've done that. I know exactly that feeling.
Especially after I correctly judged that this 4-year-old group is not that good. So it's not like he has to build himself up to get to the top. The top really isn't that high above him. And he obviously has that class. He won a Group 3. He has pedigree. He has everything he'd want. He's still a he's still a cold who, obviously not from Delta, though. Galileo out of a multiple group one space winning there. And just he's there battling. And he actually, he had a bit of a trip. He had to come off heels in the stretch, and he could have won the race. I would have really had a kick mark.
Yeah, then you really would have been. We might not. You might not be here to talk to if
exactly.
that happened.
I'd be over in the four wins for a checkup. So yeah, I was happy. You know, I was happy with you know, the analysis. That's always don't do as I say, and. Listen to what I have to say in these appearances, and then go ahead and do it. Because chances are I did something else.
Because
I talked myself out.
Because exactly. Exactly right. It happens to everybody. That's not a not alone in this. Well, you know, when you look at so many races, I print out reams of PPs and look at races and, you know, get an inkling and, you know, then you, if you're not, you know, if you're not locked in every day, and there's that's why this is a discipline. I always bring up, people have heard me bring up our friend, Joe McKay, Smoking Joe. I mean, and Joe is disciplined about it. You know, he's listening. He's watching workouts. He's hearing, you know, recommendations and suggestions from horsemen, and he keeps copious notes, and when they turn up, he's ready to strike. I mean, it's work to maximize the opportunities when you want to play.
Yeah, and then when you let one go by, then I mean, we all know what it's like, and it's you only get so many chances, and
that's true.
When those circumstances fall in place, if you're not there to capitalize, you got to wait a while for the next set of circumstances to fall in place. Mm-hmm. I will say, I am killing the NBA.
Interesting, interesting. What's your place?
I drive down to Schenectady, not every day, but when I see something, they have had lines that are so off. I look at the line, I just scratch my head. I've just been doing real, real good with the NBA, and that follows up with the end of the football season. So that's been going real, real well. And I'm an NBA nut to begin with. I watch the G League in the afternoon now because they have G League games on at 3:00, and so I watch them because they got all these kids that didn't go to college that went into the G League. Jalen Green and Kuminga and all these other.
Look at
guys.
You, unbelievable!
I get to watch them. Well, like last year when the NBA came back in the bubble and you had double headers on in the afternoon, I'm like, oh man, this is great. Now, I can't stay up late. You know, I can't keep the eyes open. But, no, the NBA's been real good. But it's basically just finding soft lines and teams that just play no defense. Like, now I'll give you an example. Knicks are playing Sacramento tonight. And the Knicks they kind of got a bad break against Golden State the other night. Every call went against them down the stretch. Too bad. Now they play Sacramento, who plays no defense. I mean, none. They can score. They can do a lot of things, but defense is not one of them. So Knicks -2 tonight, that has great interest for me because I think they can get their offense back going again. You know, just but -2 at home. You know, Knicks have a better record than Sacramento. And, you know, just I know the home thing is different now without fans. It's not what it used to be. But there's still, you know, some travel involved. Now Sacramento just played, I think it was Brooklyn, so it's not like they had to travel very far. But it's just lots of things like that are working out that I think are being missed in the line. The line has been wrong a number of times. And so, yeah, so we don't have mobile sports betting in New York, so I have to drive a half hour down the river to the casino, walk in, walk out, come home, that's it, watch the game.
I love it. Good job. All right, Dick, couple of thoughts heading into Saturday,
yeah,
Sunday.
We got the normal 10 race card Sunday night starting midnight. Going to go to race number 7, and we're going to try to pull off. I don't know if it'll be an upset, but our man Matthew Kuhn has a nice horse here for David Hayes, number 10, or AWE, sorry for the accent. Was a good third last time out. Throughout the two races before that, where he drew post 11 and post 10, now he draws post 3. He's lightly weighted. He showed a good finish. Going a mile and a quarter last time. Now he goes a mile and an eighth, which is a one-turn mile and an eighth at shot 10. I think we can just sit mid-pack and maybe at a price get in the money. And who knows if Matthew can pull off the upset. So that's race number 7, number 10. And then in race 9, it's considered a first-time starter, but it's a first-time Hong Kong starter. Fighting Star, number 5, has some form back in Australia. His last start was a decent race at Rose Hill, going 5.5 furlongs, where he was second. He won his race before that. He's been off about 9 months, which is not unusual. These horses that change hemispheres, you know, they get lots of time in between. But he seems to be training well, and he's shown really good speed in his barrier trials. They're going 5 furlongs, Fighting Star. And I love the sire. Not a Single Doubt has been red hot down under at the yearling sales. And he's off to a great start, obviously, with his runners. So number 5, Fighting Star in race 9. The other quick thing, Steve, yesterday there was a barrier trial, and the brilliant sprinter, Ethero, raced. He won in 46 flat. He's now with Casper Founds. He set 2 track records last year before he had a really bad bleeding incident. He kind of choked down in the race, and then he had a minor injury. So he's been swimming. He's been gradually building back up. Now he's getting closer and closer. He had a real, I watched it this morning. He's by 1,300 pounds. He's this gigantic 4-year-old. And he still has some opportunities towards the end of the year to show his stuff. And then obviously if he stays healthy and sound, be a big time sprinter for next year. But Ethero was a highly rated horse that was getting back to the races, and keep fingers crossed to see him back on the track.
Excellent. Dick, I also had for you, because you're always interesting on this topic, and you appreciate the historical aspect, some thoughts about the Naira decisions with the Woodward going home to Belmont and Gold Cup coming up to Belmont, to Saratoga.
Yeah, the fall meet is so tough with trainers wanting so much time between races. And the Jockey Club Gold Cup in the fall was just getting less and less status. Vino Rosso and Code of Honor, they put on a nice show. But fewer and fewer horses want to go there. And the scary thing is you see a horse win the Whitney or he wins the Woodward, and they're like, all right, we're going to train up to the Breeders' Cup. So making the race almost irrelevant. So having it at Saratoga before, let's assume we're going to have some fans back, before some kind of crowd and interest level and everything else, I think the race deserves it. I can't disagree with that. Now, question, is it still going to be a mile and a quarter?
Yeah.
Okay. We got the Whitney mile, Jockey Club Gold Cup mile and a quarter. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it made great sense. I Absolutely. I had Martin on the other day, and I thought it was, you know, not only that, I the mile and a quarter configuration at Belmont is just so ridiculous that it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. And it absolutely accommodates a wider array of handicap division horses at whatever point they are preparing for the Classic. If you want somebody that's, you know, the mile and the eighth, you know, 4 weeks out, you got it. And if you want to do the mile and a quarter and have a nice long 7 week or 8 week lead up, you got that. So I think it made a lot of sense. And the rest of it, you know, the Flower Bowl and so forth, you know, that's the just trying to lay out a program. And, you know, but the handicap division, that's a race, the Gold Cup, you want to preserve, as you don't want that slipping into, you know, grade two status, that you do whatever you can to protect it. So I applaud that move.
I totally agree.
Dick Powell, everybody, Hong Kong Jockey Club, and the action continues. And Dick, I appreciate the wide world of coverage.
Stay
next week. You got it. Dick Powell, everybody. About 20 in. Let's take a break. And when we come back, probably might be our only break of the morning. And we'll have Chris Griffin catch up with Chris after the problems down in Texas. So we get a chance to catch a wave toward the weekend. They got back going. They got a carryover into tonight, as it happens, and that Saturday card, of course, with all the stakes action. So we'll get a couple of thoughts in before Steve Haskin joins us, Rich Anglader, pretty much the second half of the morning when we come back at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.